What's up, guys? Welcome to this very special episode of the Sat Signal. Today, for the second time, I have Bish from Stormrake on the pod, and this was a really interesting discussion. We talked about Aussie sentiment and what Australians are thinking about Bitcoin right now, because Bish is in a very unique position. He has 6,000 clients around the world that buy Bitcoin and other digital assets from him. He also talks about the regulatory environment in Australia, what it's costing us as a country by not getting regulatory clarity and trying to put glue in the wheels of progress. We talked also about the cycle. Where are we in the Bitcoin cycle? Where do we think it's going to go with the changing political environment, with the change of interest rates, with what's happening in America? We talked about super funds and how people are approaching it in the country. We also talked about Bitcoin treasuries, what opportunities they hold, what impact they're having on the markets, and so much more. If you're an Australian or Kiwi in particular, and you are interested in Bitcoin or crypto generally, you will find this discussion extremely illuminating. And as a bonus, right at the start, you're going to get a little preview, an inside look into the Stormrake offices, the brand new Stormrake offices in Melbourne, one of Australia's success stories that we should all be super proud of and be looking out for. So with that said, guys, remember, the best thing you can do for us if you're enjoying this free content is just hit the subscribe button. By hitting that subscribe button, it helps us get better guests like Bish onto the show so that we can educate you and continue giving you the best information on this journey. With that said, let's get into it. Bish, welcome back for round two, my friend. How are you doing?
A privilege to be here. Always great to see yourself smiling and being with you on the show. I enjoyed myself so much. I reached out to you and I said, let's do a round two. And I was grateful to have you extend another invitation.
Mate, I got to say, for 10 o'clock at night, you are looking very sharp, brother. I think what might be cool...
Thank you, sir.
What might be cool, just before we roll tape, you actually gave me a little tour of the office. So why don't you do that quickly? Show the followers, because guys, Bish runs the largest brokerage in Australia. They started off, we're going to talk about it at the start, but just check out where they are, because I want you to see these guys are legit. They're a partner of the pod and a friend of the pod. So Bish, give us a tour. Show us where you are right now. Tell us the quick story of how you got there.
So this is my little shindig behind me where I hang out. But this is our sales and trading floor over here. I'll just get myself out of it. Everybody's obviously at home. Brokers and traders are getting some much needed rest after a big day on the trading floor. But we've only just moved in yesterday. So we're going to get the ticker symbols, like, you know, those old Wall Street trading floor ticker symbols running through it. But it's only going to be showing crypto prices, not going to be showing stocks or anything. And we're going to make it really nice. We're going to have a little poker table in the corner, a little dartboard pool table. So yeah, the guys have worked really hard to help us get to where we are now. And all the staff have, you know, they put in crazy hours. They only left just half an hour ago. So trying to give them an environment where they'd want to, you know, thrive and come in and grow, because a lot of them are fresh graduates from uni. And I want to give them an environment where they can come in and feel like they're right in the heart of a Wall Street trading floor, you know?
As long as we don't see any little people being thrown in Velcro suits at Target with marching bands coming through.
think of JP Morgan, but for crypto prime brokerage. None of that New Jersey operations.
I got to say, Bish, seriously, jokes aside, I am so happy to see a thriving Australian business. For those of you who don't know, Bish's company is called Stormrake. And you'll see a link under this video. And this is who we encourage all our clients at Unemployable to buy their crypto through. And Abish, maybe just give us the quick pitch at the start so we can get that out of the way and get to the content. Because the reason I've got you on is because you are right at the coalface on all fronts around Bitcoin in Australia. You deal with the banks, you deal with the public, you deal with high net worth individuals that are buying through you. So just give us a quick snapshot on who Stormrake is for those who didn't see the first round and are wondering who the hell is Stormrake? Who's this guy in the suit?
Awesome. So we're a full service digital asset broker. So the way we want to be used and utilized is the same way your father or grandfather may have used a stockbroker back in the day. You give us a phone call, send us an email, and we look after you from start to finish. So whether you're having a need for a trade, a deposit, a withdrawal, you're looking to be able to learn about self-custody, you want to have a ability to learn about this new asset class. You can book in consultations complimentary, of course. You only pay for the trading. You only pay a 2% brokerage fee, thanks to Hutto's link. Usually it's 3%, but we've knocked it down for the unemployable crew. And that's how we operate. We operate on a brokerage fee model only. So you only pay for what you use. So that way we can help you get in and out of the markets through a simple phone call or email. So for a lot of people who are familiar with platforms, and again, there's nothing wrong with the older Aussie exchange. They're doing a hard go of it themselves, having to battle the banks. But at the same time, when you're facing the banks, a really hostile regulatory environment, you need somebody who's an expert in digital assets that can help you navigate those waters. And that's what we operate and what we offer.
And in addition to that, I'm a client of StoreMake. I buy all my Bitcoin through you guys. The 2% rate, if you guys who are experienced, you shop around, you might go, hang on, I pay like 1% somewhere else at CoinSpot or somewhere. The big difference with Bish's service and the team and the reason they have, how many clients have you got roughly now, Bish?
6,000.
6,000 Australian clients and clients around the world is that. Although it sounds higher on the surface, where a lot of these exchanges make money from you with a 1% rate is on the spread. So, can you just explain that really quickly to people?
Absolutely.
And then we'll jump into the rest of this content that I'm itching to get into with you.
Sure thing. So just to give you an idea, on CoinSpot right now, you'll pay for one Bitcoin 185,760. So 185,700 to buy your Bitcoin from them. With me, you can buy it from me at 182 and 800. So 182, 800. So you can save yourself nearly 3 grand per Bitcoin coming in and buying through us. And that works out to be a 1.8 to 2% difference that you'll be saving just on the execution alone. That's not factoring in their fees of execution fees or deposit withdrawal fees that you'll get hit with as well. So that's how we can come out ahead. We'll get you more sats per purchase, and that can be confirmed before you even place your first trade with a live quote.
Guys, that's what I'd encourage you to do. So use the link below if you want to talk to these guys. They are awesome. And as you described, they are old school. So I, you know, like when I buy Bitcoin or whatever, before they transfer it, they send me an email saying, hey, Adam was going to send you a test transaction. Can you verify in your wallet that's arrived? Then I verify it, and then they send the rest. And the service is like, I've never waited more than an hour ever to get a response from you guys. It's been incredible. So with that said, Bish, let's talk about it. You've been around Bitcoin for many years. The first episode we did together, you talked about buying Bitcoin on a piece of paper in a McDonald's car park. It was that long ago. Sounded like some dodgy deal.
Back in the day, mate, it all peer-to-peer.
All peer-to-peer, right? It's like an underground magic internet money. So, for those of you who don't know, Bish, he's been around this space for a long time. He's one of the most highly respected Bitcoiners in the country. But today you run this huge business with 6,000 clients that you're talking to, and in some cases custodying for, and so on. How would you describe the sentiment among Australian investors right now towards this asset class relative to other times in history?
It's a fantastic question. I mean, the bullish sentiment across wide cross sections of Australian investing community is wild. Like, I'm seeing it for the most part, I'm seeing over 55s coming into this asset class. Now, maybe that's because our service is better suited for those who are wanting a little bit more handholding, but it's astonishing the amount of people rolling over from industry super funds into self-managed super funds, the amount of people who are actually saving in Bitcoin. And I'm not just talking about people who are wanting to have a bit of a punt or speculate on, Bitcoin going to the moon or whatever it is. The moon boys have well and truly moved on to other chains. There are a significant portion of Australians who are coming to me and saying, I'm just going to use Bitcoin as a savings account. And we have people coming to us with 2,000 bucks a month or 2K a fortnight to come in and just do little top ups of their investment. And they just treat it like a same of the sentiment has really shifted from one of, oh, this is just a speculative asset that I might have 1 or 2% of my portfolio in, to no, the rest of my portfolio is speculative and Bitcoin is my bread and butter. And it's been honestly the fastest change in risk appetite I've seen in a very long period of time. Like within the last 18 months, it's been astonishing to see.
What do you think's doing that, mate? Like, what do you think's driving that change in the attitude? Is it just that we're moving towards that Lindy effect, that we talk about in the Bitcoin community when the asset's been alive and survived 20 years? Something happens in these births of new assets where people all of a sudden realize, oh shit, this is not going away. This is going to be here. Do you think it's Lindy effect, or do you think there's other factors at play that people are prepared to go further up on the risk curve? Or what do you think's driving it? Is it a combination of all the above, the White House? What do you think it is?
It is a combination of all of the above. Obviously, the White House and regulatory clarity in the United States has helped. The ETFs have helped. But what I actually think is the biggest driver, in my humble assessment, is that Australians are doing it really tough right now with a cost of living crisis, a failing Aussie dollar, stocks aren't cutting it enough anymore, and they're looking for alternatives, alternative assets as a basket. And we're talking private equity, private debt. We're talking about Bitcoin and digital assets. We're talking about precious metals, commodities in general. They have had a sharp I increase in interest. So I think that it's actually the average Australian has gone, you know what? I've been trying the same thing over and over again for 2 decades, 3 decades, 4 decades. I've gone to uni or I've done a trade. I've paid off my mortgage or currently paying off a mortgage. I'm sending my kids to good school. So they've done everything that they've been told to do to be good Australians, but they're just not getting ahead in life. They're having to cut coupons or they're having to wait for government assistance. We talked about last time how half of the Australian Electoral Commission is now reliant on the government, either for subsidies, income, or some form of employment. So we're heading towards complete socialism. And so Australians have had enough. And I think that the rise of Bitcoin's adoption and usage is actually driven by people looking for alternatives. And Bitcoin is the king of alternatives, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and I think people are starting to realize that, and they're starting to slowly understand the sleight of hand that is the concept of money printing, and they're starting to understand, hang on, prices are not necessarily going up. They're only going up in fiat terms. It's in this idea of inflation is start they're starting to understand that really everything's going down in Bitcoin terms. And once that penny drops, I think we're going to see some big transitions. Now, on the flip side of that, Bish, like how I mean, you're sort of in between this hostile regulatory environment and the banks who are watching their consumers wake up to the game. And I cannot think of anywhere in the world that is as hostile to crypto as Australia. It seems like every single day, and I'm not you. I mean, you're sitting on a trading desk with 6,000 clients, but I'm getting it every day. People going, ANZ's just locked me out of my account pending a security review with a, are you, you know, like banks are literally stopping people moving their own money into bank accounts. How are you seeing it when you're dealing with banks and compliance, and what downstream impacts do you think that holds for Australia as a country when we look at the US, who's just flipped and gone pro and supportive?
Absolutely. I mean, even Donald Trump, I believe, is looking at or has potentially already signed an executive order outlawing debanking for crypto service providers within the United States, which would be a huge, and I think it has actually already occurred. It's a massive development. And so having that regulatory clarity and the fact that the banks can't just shut you off at night just because they've decided to, and that's how they feel like it. It's honestly one of the most anti-competitive practices that we have in this country because, Bitcoin, one of the premises of Bitcoin, particularly in self-custody, is that you get to become your own bank. And I think that the banks are not ignorant. They're aware of that fact. And so what they're doing is quite anti-competitive behavior. They're shutting off alternative rails where people can transact freely with one another and move value with one another without having to go through an intermediary such as the bank. And you're watching and witnessing a lot of Bitcoin credit solutions starting to pop up within the ecosystem, even here in Australia, where so you can borrow against your Bitcoin holdings to then not have to sell the asset, but then get fresh Aussie dollars into your bank account. When those solutions started to become more and more viable, the banks are like, if people aren't using us for savings and they're not using us for credit, what's the point of us being around? And so they're making it super difficult to get into the ecosystem or the digital asset ecosystem, particularly with Bitcoin, under the premise of safety or fraud protection or, scam protection or whatever it is. And it's just the most egregious kind of set of commentary that I could think of, because all of our clients are thoroughly vetted. We ensure that they are investing in, sound assets, mainly Bitcoin. They're coming to us to be able to, get into USDT or stables or Ethereum, but that's their right. That's their capital and how they wish to invest and how they wish to get exposure to this asset class. That's up to them. So despite the fact that there are significant challenges, here's the good news. Over the last week or so, we've collected over $12 million in deposits. So we have been able to get people over the other side. But that's part of the reason why we have our service, is that when you run into friction or the banks are, closing your or freezing your account or blocking the transaction, give us a call, because again, you're not doing anything illegal or immoral, or you don't have to come up with stories to tell your bank to release the funds. Be forthright, be clear and transparent. Say, hey, I'm dealing with a digital asset broker based in Melbourne. We're AUSTRAC registered. You can share with them our AUSTRAC registration number. They can look it up for themselves. And so that way we can take you over the other side. So despite the challenges that clients are facing, let's work together to get you over the other side. Because once you're in Bitcoin, you can do whatever you want. You don't even have to ask me for permission.
It happened to me, as you know, Bish. This week when I was trying to transfer it, I went through some challenges again. And it's the great thing about working with you and the team was that you were just able to really help me through it and get it done. But it is, look, guys, I find it really, look, I'm a free speech absolutist and a freedom maximalist, so I probably have an extreme view, but I'm very much of the opinion is that who are the banks to censor your movement of money? It's so profoundly wrong and spiritually wrong that it's your money that you lent the bank. When you deposit it, they give you an IOU and then they tell you what you can and can't do with it. It's your money. But where it really hits home, guys, for the listeners to think about is that it's not money. It is an abstracted form of your life that you lent them for a period of time to look after. And then when you want that abstracted form of your life back, your sacred life force back, in that expression, they start to control it. And that's why I've become so profoundly committed to helping people take self-sovereignty through Bitcoin. Because as Bish said, once you use self-custody, I run a Bitcoin node down the hallway in my office here, and I have complete self-sovereignty. No bank will ever stop me from moving that net worth or my time, the abstracted life force myself. So really think about that, guys, and why you start to understand why we bang on about this stuff. It's because we see that as profoundly and spiritually wrong, which is interesting. So Bish, you see like this really optimistic, bullish environment from the investor side, which is encouraging, and you're working within an aggressive side. But I'd love to just hear from an Aussie entrepreneur like yourself, who's clearly doing great with 12 million in deposits just in the last week. Well done, growing team, great business. What impacts do you think it has on Australia when we have such poor regulation, lack of clarity, and this egregious overreach in trying to stifle what is clearly the future of the world, really digital assets? So what do you think of the downstream effects for Australia as a nation and for its people?
Well, we're losing out. I mean, we've got a huge brain drain in this country. People are fleeing to go to places where capital and investment is far better treated, whether that be Southeast Asia, Middle East, pockets of Europe, particularly the United States has become a bit of a bastion for digital assets. It's really unfortunate because a little known fact is that Wi-Fi, in its current form, was developed in Australia. And we sent it out to the rest of the world. That was an Aussie invention. But we were really slow to the rest of the internet race. If unless you're selling houses or digging holes, the Australian government doesn't want to have a bar of you. And that's why, we have some of the most aggressive taxes in the country, in the world. Like, we have over 100 different taxes and levies that are hit on Australian businesses from the federal and state governments. It becomes really hard to operate. Like ourselves recently, we've been on a bit of a hiring spree. So now we pay payroll tax. For what purpose? We're paying 8% of our monthly payroll to the Australian government for no reason other than the fact that they've instituted a limiter
on growth. They don't want you to hire people. You have to, and once you cross that threshold, you can't cross back down. You stay at that. So let's say, God forbid, we have a correction and we have to downsize our team, whatever it is, right? God forbid that happens. But we would still be paying that payroll tax regardless of whether we go through that. So it's just too much, right? And it doesn't make any sense. They're just throwing taxes and levies out there for the sake of it. I mean, even our beloved Victorian premier, who wants to come out and she wants to institute a sales tax on top of the on top of what is a stamp duty. So the stamp duty is worn by the buyer, and the sales tax is going to be worn by the seller. So they're taxing both sides of the same transaction. It's getting out of control. And so, again, in terms of the bright orange hope that is Bitcoin, it really does provide an alternative, because you can store your wealth in assets that, you know, can quite easily move with you, whether you go overseas or protect your family's wealth from government overreach. But in terms of the downstream effects, it's just that it makes it really hard to see productivity and growth within the private sector within this country, right? Most of the job growth is public sector or government contracts or government subsidies. That's not real economic growth. That's not real productivity, right? Despite the challenges, we've been able to grow. But I speak to a lot of people. I go to like these networking business clubs and hubs and lunches, and a lot of people are having to keep their teams at a certain size. They're downsizing or they're offshoring. That's part of the biggest problem as well, is that a lot of Aussie capital and entrepreneurs are offshoring teams or are offshoring capital. There's far more efficient ways that we can keep, if we had the right incentive structure to keep Australians here, we would be one of the most successful, prosperous nations on the planet. But because we have such an aggressive regulatory regime and we push entrepreneurs to the absolute breaking point, we make it really hard to operate. And so I think some of the downstream effects is that talent and capital will flee Australia if it hasn't already.
I look at you, Bish, and that's what I think. I look at you, and I've got a few years on you, but here we have a young Australian with your business partners who've gone from a three-person spare room in a house to where you are now. And if we don't start treating people like you better, there will come a point where you just go look at each other and go, how about we just set up a 1-300 number in Australia, move everybody to Dubai, and just continue, right? Like that's where this ends. And then all those jobs, all those seats that you guys watching this on YouTube, all those seats out there are gone. That office space that an investor has invested, that's gone. You know, like all the downstream benefits just disappear and go to another country, because it just, the incentive, the crushing regulatory environment, there's only so much these guys are going to be able to, I'm not saying that they are doing, I'm just saying that that's where it ends, you know. That's very, very sad, especially guys who are in a business like yours that really could operate from anywhere in the world, but you're choosing to operate in the state of Victoria, now the most indebted state in the world. Anyway, we're not here to talk about politics. We're here to talk about other stuff. So why don't we talk about that quickly? A big announcement was that lending product launched in Australia, which was, you know, you can now borrow against Bitcoin to buy a house. That's really exciting, because Australians are obviously massive real estate. But it opens up, when I was in Prague, there was a platform called Firefish. And basically, Firefish basically is a marketplace where Bitcoiners who want to borrow money say, hey, listen, I want to borrow this much against my Bitcoin, and I'm prepared to pay X rate. And on the other side, you've got lenders, private individuals, family offices, whatever, that want to get a return secured against Bitcoin, that are putting up, hey, we've got capital available at this rate, and it matches them. Basically, this enables that kind of thing to happen in Australia now, and for private individuals to get into the business of being a lender, like a bank, or if you've got Bitcoin, retaining the asset. Could you sort of talk us through and explain what you're seeing in Australia right now with that stuff?
Absolutely. And that's a fantastic product. And it's also being able to, this lender in particular is recognizing Bitcoin as not just as collateral assets, but as a part of your asset portfolio to recognize your overall net wealth. So they have to do these eligibility and serviceability assessments as to whether you can get a loan. And for a lot of people who are like predominantly crypto or Bitcoin net wealth, for a long time couldn't get serviced on a loan because that wealth just was not recognized. And that has now happened, which is awesome. So you've got the collateralization of Bitcoin on one side, but also recognizing it as a asset that you can, you know, show that you're liquid and you've got, you know, means to service the loan requirement. And so these assets are, these services are only going to continue to grow, right? I think the deliverer of that is Block Earner. James Coombs is the guy that runs the operation there, and he's a top bloke. Like, I cannot speak highly enough of him. We have some of our clients who also trade with Vield, who's another lender within Australia who's regulated, and we've had some of our clients withdraw Bitcoin to their wallets in order to get borrow against their BTC and get fresh Aussie dollars. And that's awesome because, you know, people could do all manner of things with this fresh capital, whether it be buying a home, doing a renovation, buying a new car, and they still have the Bitcoin asset without having to sell it. And I think that Bitcoin will have many more financial layers built on top of it, because Bitcoin is the ultimate, in my opinion, the ultimate financial settlement layer for the whole globe. Right. And there'll be a number and myriad of different services that kind of, and a lot of different verticals that will get spun up on Bitcoin, this base layer. And the best way I could describe it is the internet. The internet in the early 90s was just pretty much just an email inbox for people to communicate with each other. But then there was a lot of different applications and layers that got built on top of the internet, whether we're talking Amazon, Google, social media, shopping, streaming services. All of that got built on top of the internet base layer because it was safe, secure, and reliable, and an easy way to send and receive information. What Bitcoin does is it allows you to provide a safe and secure layer to send and receive value. So all of these new applications and all of these new mortgage products, lending products, and like hybrid services between TradFi and the new DeFi services are going to meld together and will ultimately settle back to Bitcoin. And that, I think, is incredibly bullish in terms of the market structure where we are now, because we're still so early. We've only seen, you know, Bitcoin being used in two or three main ways. The first way is store of value. Second way is means of exchange and And then the third way is collateral asset. So those are the three ways currently Bitcoin is being used. But there are infinite ways that a portable, digital, finite, scarce asset can be used when you have the level of security and decentralization that the Bitcoin network provides you. So that's what I think is going to be quite interesting to see.
So for those who don't know, TradFi stands for traditional finance. I like to call it TardFi. But
that's good.
But what you're talking about here is quite interesting, right? Because a lot of times people who shit talk Bitcoin all the time don't understand that it is pristine collateral. And it took me a long time for that penny to drop when I heard people referring to it. Bitcoin is saying it's pristine collateral. It's the best collateral that a lender could possibly have. Do you want to explain, Bish, why that is? Why is it such a powerful asset for a lender? So if I wanted to lend Bish $100,000 and I took Bitcoin as security, why is having Bitcoin so powerful from a TradFi point of view? Like, if I was a traditional financier, why is it so sexy to me?
It's a superb question. Two main reasons is its divisibility and its availability. So if you were to say, for example, the traditional mortgage is backed by property, and let's say you're in a bit of mortgage stress, you can't sell a square meter of turf and say, you know, and pay it back to the bank and say, that's okay, mate, I gave you a square meter of my backyard. Let's pay down the LVR and get your loan to value ratio to a little bit more of a healthy level. You can't do that. You either sell the whole thing or you don't. And as a lender, it's really hard to move such an illiquid asset if you want to be able to do that as quickly as you possibly can. And imagine you're a big bank and you've got hundreds of thousands, if not millions of mortgages on your book. If you've got even 10% of it in mortgage stress, you have tens of thousands of properties that you're going to need to liquidate instantly on the open market, which would cause, you know, a market crash that you can then to try to recover your value. Whereas with Bitcoin, it's very divisible. So you can go down to the eighth decimal place and it's 24/7 availability. So if you're a lender and you don't get paid within your 30-day period to, you know, continue to service the loan agreement, then what happens is you can call upon that Bitcoin either partially or liquidate in full at any time. And that's such a powerful position to put yourself in, because, or even yourself as the borrower, you might say, okay, well, I'm happy to pay down a portion. Like, let's say Bitcoin has been tearing up. It's up 30% for the year, right? And you want to use a portion of those gains to pay down some of your loan. You can do that by reducing the amount of the unit amount that you're holding with that lender. You go from one Bitcoin to say 0.9 of a Bitcoin, and you've just reduced your overall loan by $18,000 Australian. Happy days. The lender's happy because they've got less risk on the table. They've received more of their funds. You've paid off a portion of your loan, just pure profit or capital growth. And then if, for whatever reason, I as the borrower don't pay you back, Adam as the lender, you can either partially or fully liquidate the asset on demand 24/7. Pristine collateral. Never seen anything like it.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I know, like, for myself, you know, I lend money as part of my, you know, portfolio of things I do. And I've traditionally done first mortgage lending over property. So if a developer comes along and they need $1 million for something, they might have a $2 million property and I'll lend them up to 60% of the valuation of the property. And if things go south, I can take the property. And I've done this for a few years now. I do it in partnership with a group out of Melbourne. But I now look at that and I go, or I could go on to something like Firefish or one of these, you know, DeFi projects or these, you know, these Bitcoin lending platforms. And I can say, all right, I'll lend this guy, you know, $100,000 against his Bitcoin. If he falls outside of the payment parameters or he doesn't pay me the interest, the way these platforms work is they will lock it in a smart contract. My interest is in the smart contract guaranteed. And if he falls over for any reason, I get the Bitcoin to cover the debt. Plus I get my interest 100%. And I can liquidate the Bitcoin or keep the Bitcoin. It's up to me, but I'm literally taking no risk. I don't have to worry about going to court or writing bad letters or waiting to see what the auction result is. It's just instant, and my money is locked in a smart contract up front. So as a traditional TradFi lender in the past, in against real estate, it's like a dream come true. If you're like a retiree looking to get 8%, 9% return, it's actually risk-free, which is kind of crazy. Not financial advice, you guys have to do your own research, but this is the world we're moving into. And this is what Bish is saying about the base layer. When you've got a base layer that's instantly auditable every 10, well, it self audits every 10 minutes, you can't double spend it. It's the most honest base layer there is. All of these kinds of opportunities for retirees, for entrepreneurs that might need some cash, like Bish might have, you know, $100,000 worth of Bitcoin on his company's balance sheet, but doesn't want to sell it. He might say, look, we just need $50,000 to make payroll. He could go and borrow against that. I've got a friend here in Limassol who has just taken some money on a Bitcoin loan and has now put it into a cash flowing investment. And now he's got the Bitcoin still growing. The cash flow investment is outperforming by a mile the interest rate on the Bitcoin loan, and he's able to pay his rent on the difference, basically. So it's really interesting when you start to learn about this stuff. Where do you think that's heading, Bish, like with someone like Saylor, who's got 70,000, is it now, Bitcoin? He's got this massive stack. Where do you think it's heading? I mean, I think he's going to be like the reserve bank of, you know, the future. I mean, he's going to have this enormous stack of, you know, capital that's completely audited every 10. Where do you think that's going? Like, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, look, what will eventually end up happening is those who have huge stockpiles of Bitcoin can be able to operate like a nation state's treasury. And look, that's what I think eventually will allow Bitcoin to become the ubiquitous and the prime financial settlement layer. It's gonna happen gradually, then suddenly, right? And that's why it's so important to have these I would say legacy institutions, because I hate saying that. I know I'm saying that as a guy in a suit, but legacy institutions will bridge the, you know, cypherpunk crypto ethos of, you know, not your keys, not your coins. Self-sovereignty is super important. I advocate for it 110%, but you need to have some sort of bridging over the next 10, 20, 30 years. Once we get to that fully self-sovereign, fully autonomous, fully decentralized future, you're going to need these big institutions, whether they be corporations or legacy financial players, to kind of intermediate Bitcoin whilst people are still struggling to understand it. Whereas a nicely packaged Bitcoin loan product that is provided through a regulated lender can make Bitcoin more palatable for people to come into it. So, you know, guys like Saylor, or even, you know, the US Treasury is looking at, you know, shoring up its own Bitcoin reserve that was signed into effect earlier on the year. Now there's conversations about having a new dividend dollar. The US has just pretty much given up on the US dollar at the moment. More on that later. And they want to use assets like gold and Bitcoin, in particular BTC, to shore up confidence in its new issued IOU. And I think that Bitcoin now has gone and really crossed the lexicon from speculative asset to world reserve asset. And I think that's really an important distinction to make, is that it's no longer being treated like, you know, an asset that you're going to come across in McDonald's car park at some point. It's now treated like, you know, a genuine global reserve asset with pristine collateral status that can be used in a lot of different ways. And what Saylor will end up having is just, yeah, like you said, pretty much a reserve bank. And what he can do, his options are limitless because as to what he can do next.
Yeah, it's so fascinating, and we're seeing that battle for, you know, capital accumulation that's it serves as a cornerstone on balance sheets, just in full effect right now with the Bitcoin treasury companies and all that stuff that's going on, and we might get to that in a moment. But it's going to be very, very interesting to sort of see how that works out. Where do you think we are, like, in the cycle right now? Like, you've been around for a while. I've been around for a while. My feeling is that I heard that saying that it feels like it's a beach ball being held underwater at the moment. Like, the price, given, you know, all this optimism from the White House, I just saw an announcement, the CEO of Nakamoto just announced today, we're buying $1 billion worth of Bitcoin tomorrow. It was on Cointelegraph an hour ago. What do you think is the reason that we're seeing all this treasury activity? We're seeing, like, just the treasury company soaking up more than what's being produced naturally. Why have we not seen the massive parabolic move yet? Do you think it's coming? What do you think's keeping the price relatively modest compared to the narrative?
So it's a really good question. I think there's really two things to unpack here. Is one, there's a lot of coin rotation going on right now, which is not a bearish thing at all. It's actually a bullish setup where there's a lot of old coins being moved from legacy wallets into new hands, right? Mm-hmm. And that is actually quite positive, because if you've just got this, you know, really, you know, legacy whales who are holding massive stores of Bitcoin wealth, then, you know, and you're not getting proper distribution of these coins, it's going to be hard for Bitcoin to really get into that escape velocity in terms of adoption and use case and all that kind of good stuff. So we saw 10,000 Bitcoin, you know, earlier on in the month of July, got sold into the open market, right? It was a $9 billion sale. $9 billion from one wallet, right? It could be a group or it could be one person, but one person, one group, one entity open on the market. This is crazy, like, because as a trader, it really drives me nuts. They could have done that trade in so many different ways to not, you know, absolutely destroy the global market price. But even then, it only moved 3.5%. 3.5%. They sold $9 billion on a Friday morning, one of the most illiquid times to be trading, between the changeover between the US session to the Asian session. We got a bit of a sell-off. The market soaked it up. There was so much demand, and we closed the day positive, right? It goes...
That's unbelievable. Like, going back, that would have triggered a bear market, going back even one cycle, right? Like, yeah. And it just snapped up, gone into the ether. And now we're seeing, like, today, Nakamoto saying, we want $1 billion worth tomorrow. Just one buyer. That most people have never even heard of.
Yep. And that's, again, that's that coin rotation that I was talking about. There's a lot of old wallet addresses, legacy wallet addresses starting to move now. And those legacy wallets are offloading coins into new holders who will then, you know, be able to go through that. And that's good flow of capital, because you just don't want to have, you know, 10% of the supply concentrated in the hands of a few wallets, right? Or distributed amongst a few wallets. And so whilst, yes, we are seeing, I wouldn't call it price suppression, because, you know, as much of the buying demand has increased, there are legacy wallets that are moving to satisfy that buy demand. But it's like a, you know, it's like holding a beach ball underwater, or it's like a dam wall that's about to break and give way. The flood is coming, and we see little spikes of it. And I think that we have to also, the second thing to that is we have to temper expectations. Now that the ETFs are in play, and now that the institutions are here and well and truly entrenched in the Bitcoin markets, we have to understand that, you know, massive blow-off tops and huge multi-year bear market corrections are most likely a thing of the past. I'm not saying that we're not going to get runs up, and I'm not saying that we're not going to see corrections, but take, for example, all of 2024 and 2025. At the start of 2024, before as the ETFs came online, 11 of them came online in mid-Jan last year. Price was around $30,000. We ran up to 44K, and then we hit a new all-time high just before halving, 73,000 US. Then for a few, like 4, 5, 6 months, we tracked sideways, even touched 50K, had a lot of people starting to call for a new bear market. Donald Trump comes in, new market rally, and we go to 108. Tariffs, global trade concerns, geopolitical concerns, Bitcoin pulls back to 74,000. People are calling for the next bear market. It's over. It's never been so over. What happens next? We go to 123,000 US dollars and we print new highs, and people are calling for 500,000. We're going to the moon. It's never going to go up. It's never going to go down again. So the market structure has, and as a trader, it's fundamentally changed over the last 18 months. It's not the same market when it was completely retail driven, where there was these euphoric blow off tops and severe, you know, loss of confidence bear markets. We're now seeing structured buying coming in from ETFs, treasury companies. There are still going to be sell-offs. It's going to trade like a global macro asset class. It'll trade like the S&P 500. I'm not saying that you'll get S&P 500 like returns, but this is what the S&P 500 has done for the last 100 plus years. It's up and to the right, up and to the right, does not stop. Corrections, yep, they come along. Bear markets, yep, they come along. But what happens? The currency printer keeps going, assets get bought back up again, and it goes up and to the right. That's exactly what's going to happen with Bitcoin over the next 10 to 15 years. There'll be corrections, there'll be bear markets, there'll be pauses in buying, but then they'll restart the currency printer over and over again, and the asset price will continue to go up and to the right as Bitcoin goes to $1 million. So I don't think that we're going to be able to apply the same four-year cycle lens to what I believe is a new market regime that we're in at the moment.
I think, people, you've really got to listen to what Bish just said there, like up and to the right across everything. This is not just a Bitcoin statement. This is just hard asset. The government print money, and that money has to find a home. So it finds a home in assets. Like people, like the poor people spend all their money, and the wealthier people invest what's left, and the corporations invest everything. And there's only 8 major asset categories to go to. And so if you hold assets, that's the thing. Like if you want to get rich, you buy assets that go up in price. If you want to get really rich, you do it with leverage. So the more money you can put into the system, the richer you get. That's fundamentally it. And then you look at the horses, and Bitcoin just so happens to be, since it was born, the fastest horse for pretty much every year, except for 3 years. And even like for Bitcoin, as you check coin stats every day, it feels like, oh, Bitcoin's doing nothing. I just checked here while you were talking. We're up 93% over the last 12 months. And we're sitting here going, come on, do something. You're like, dude, it's done 93% in the last 12 months. And the money printer hasn't even really fired up. And I'd love to get your take in a minute. It looks like you wanted to say something. I want to ask you another question after this one. But what was your comment?
No, I was just agreeing with you, is that, you know, at nearly doubling year on year, we've become so speed blind in Bitcoin that, you know, we're like, oh, it's only doubled in the last 12 months. What's going on here? It's like, that is astonishing. That's like, to give you a sense of scale, that's almost 15 years of bank interest rates delivered to you in a year, right?
Yeah.
It's absolutely astonishing. No, sorry, I stand corrected. It's almost 30 years because, you know, we haven't had good interest rates, savings rates on bank interest rates for a while. 30 years of bank interest rates in 1 year. So you've now received 30 years of your life just being able to hold Bitcoin. It is one of the most liberating assets you can hold. It gives you so much time. And then with that time, which is the only, you know, non-renewable resource on the planet, you can do so much with that.
And what counterparty risk or scandal or fraud or any of that did we experience? None. Like I have a decent Tesla bag, and I was recently texting some of my inner circle mates of investors, going, "Look, I'm still bullish on Tesla, but these are my concerns. Do any of you guys share my concerns? Number one, Elon's going to get shot. Number two, he's going to lose his mind and become a crazy billionaire in a cave somewhere." He's going to get go into politics. These are all counterparty risks for Tesla shareholders, right? For China, right? China is now making, in my opinion, better EVs than Tesla, but the savior is that they might win on the AI side with the robotaxis. And I'm talking as a Tesla bull, right? But these are all the things I'm thinking about with Tesla. When I think about Bitcoin, it's like, will the government keep printing money? Yes. What's the hardest asset in the world? Bitcoin. Okay, I'll just keep buying Bitcoin. That's the end of my thesis. There's nothing else to think about. There's not some Bitcoin CEO who's going to get caught on a super yacht doing coke with hookers, right? It's not going to happen, right? It's not going to favor one country over another. It doesn't care that Russia might be fighting with China, or it's borderless. It's a protocol. And you were talking about protocol before, and how, you know, everything gets built on the protocol. WWW is the internet protocol that took 15 years before we settled on WWW as the winner. And then upon that, browsers, and upon browsers, search engines and banks and apps and all the ways we interact, it's all living on this base layer protocol. And there's only a few times in someone's life, in a human life, that you'll see the birth of a protocol. And so what we're seeing now is the birth of a monetary protocol called Bitcoin. And Bitcoin has, I think, now won that race. It is going to be the base layer. And then upon that, we're going to see mortgages and loans and, you know, DeFi lending projects and, you know, used as a settlement layer for real estate transactions and all kinds of things. It's going to be an exciting time. So, Bish, we're almost getting through this. There's lots to talk about. It's exciting. And I love hearing your take, man, because I totally agree. But what do you think's going to happen over, like, we love Australia, but it's a small place. It's kind of globally not that relevant. When it comes to a global asset like Bitcoin, you've really got to watch what's happening in the big markets like America, which leads the world as the current reserve. What do you see coming down the pipe now that it's become clear that the bit that that Trump can't get the American economy out of the trouble it's in by getting Elon to cut costs? That didn't work. And God bless him, it was great that they tried. And then having Howard come in and try and increase, you know, revenues, that is not going to get it done. You know, what do you think's going to actually happen now once they get Powell out? You know, who hates Trump, and Trump hates him because they're on different sides of the political aisle. But when Trump gets what he wants, which is cheaper money from the Fed, from your perspective as a trader and somebody who knows how these markets work, what happens next?
Parabola. I mean, it's going to get crazy, and I'm not just talking about for Bitcoin. I'm talking for stocks. I'm talking for precious metals, real estate. When cheap money starts flooding the system, the parabolic move, the melt up move that everybody's been calling for, will start to truly begin. I mean, Bitcoin touched 122,000 yesterday on the whiff of potentially cutting rates. It jumped the interest rate futures, where they speculate on what future interest rates are going to be from the Federal Reserve, jumped to 88%, the highest it has been in months. And people were now front running that expectations that they're going to cut interest rates, which is going to make borrowing easier, which is going to make it easier for the banks to create credit, which is going to make it easier to pump the system with cheap cash. And what is going to happen is hard assets, scarce assets of all manner of nature, digital and physical alike, are going to absolutely melt up. We've got CPI numbers coming out in about 10 minutes. So the inflation print will come through. The expectations is that inflation, now again, you guys have to take this with a massive dosage of salt, because their government reported inflation statistics, which we know is completely inaccurate. But once you've taken that salt dose, you got to understand that they're wanting to paint a particular narrative to force the hand of the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates. So the inflation numbers are expected to come in either soft or in line with expectations, which means that the Federal Reserve in the September meeting will be forced to cut interest rates 25 to 50 bips, most likely just 25 bips. And when that happens, we also just, yesterday was Tuesday, and they're coming through and they're getting the ability to cut, they cut interest rates today. The RBA here in Australia cut interest rates. And so we're starting to see this global leveraging up again, because you've got to understand in 2022, 2023, we saw the fastest interest rate hikes in history, right? In recent history, I should say. And so when you had that macro backdrop of rising interest rates and tighter capital controls or tighter credit controls, then the market took a breather, both like, you know, crypto took a breather, stocks took a breather, real estate took a breather. Now what they're doing is they're getting ready, mate. They're like, they're literally, it's the war drums are beating up, getting saying, guys, cheap credit, cheap capital is going to pump the system. And smart money is already allocating towards Bitcoin, right? They're allocating in droves because they know what's going to come down the pipeline. They don't want to be in position after the announcement is made. And once the market started to melt up, they want to be in position before the melt up move happens. And that's when asset prices in general are just going to absolutely fly and go to the stars.
For Aussies listening to this, think about what happened pre-COVID, right? Like if you could jump in a time machine, knowing what you now know about what happened to real estate prices and asset prices when COVID hit, what would you do? Would you be leaving your money in cash and sitting on the sidelines? Or would you be waiting for that initial announcement of when everybody got scared and then, you know, you could buy real estate cheap? And would you get as much money as you can into hard assets? And the answer is, if you're not an idiot, is buy as much hard assets as you can, because it all doubled, you know. And that's I tend to agree. And I think we're, you know, this book behind me, The Big Print by Larry Lepard, talks about this, but it's becoming clear to me that the US is going to try to print their way out of this. And we may, Larry just the other day said he thinks the big print is going to happen in 2026. And you know, that little trading floor is not so little of yours. You might need to double or triple it, mate. Who knows?
We'll see what happens. But it's crazy, man. They're not letting up. And it's, you're absolutely right. They've tried to cut their way out of the deficit. They tried to grow their way out of the deficit. Both failed spectacularly. Best efforts as they did try. And now they're like looking, okay, guys, this is what we have to do. Debt monetization. We're going to print our way out of this living hellhole, and we're going to sacrifice the US dollar in order to get ourselves out. As long as we're pumping asset prices up, the Federal Reserve put out a paper saying that they're going to potentially revalue their gold certificates, which are priced at $45 at book value, whereas the spot price is close to $3,500. So there's all manner of accounting tricks that they're going to do to make US assets, infrastructure, gold reserves, the strategic Bitcoin reserve that got formed into life. They're going to make their asset side of their balance sheet look so strong that the debt looks minuscule in comparison.
Just explain that for people, because you said that quickly. I understand it, and it's incredibly powerful, that bit about the gold reserve. So the US has on their balance sheet a whole bunch of gold, right? But it's valued on their books at how much? $45 an ounce, did you say?
Yeah, $45 and something cents an ounce, correct.
And how much is gold actually today?
$3,400 US, as the time speaking.
It was like 800 times or something. I don't know what that is, but it's a lot.
It's a lot.
So what you're saying is that they can go in and just simply wave a wand and say, okay, well, we're just tidying our balance sheet up. Oh, look, there's a whole asset here that's undervalued by a lot. And then they could borrow against it. They could borrow to buy Bitcoin against it. They could convert it to Bitcoin. There's lots they could do, right? And in that legislation, they said, we want the ability to acquire Bitcoin, but at a net neutral to taxpayers. So in theory, they could sell the existing asset, which is gold. And to give you an idea of how poorly gold has performed against Bitcoin, for those who are not aware, if you bought a dollar's worth of gold in 2010, you would have $2.74 or $3 or something today. And if you put that same dollar into Bitcoin, you'd have 1.5 million. So which of those two assets do you think they should maybe have more exposure to, ladies and gentlemen? Mm. And so if the US does start to do this stuff, and this is pure speculation now, but if you look at it and you go, all right, the Trump Organization's the sixth biggest treasury in the United States when it comes to Bitcoin, number one. You've got a pro-crypto White House. You've got people in the White House who own Bitcoin are advocating for it openly. They're saying the quiet part out loud. What do you think? And you've got a president and his sons that openly say, we're coming for TradFi because you fuckers debanked us, right? They yes. cut the Trump family off. And they have openly said, you want to debank us? We're now in power. We're going to make people debank the banks. And that's what they've actually said that. And it's like the chef's kiss, right? Like just a big fuck you to the banks because that's what they did to them. And Trump is a lot of things, but somebody who forgets is not one of them, right? This is a guy that will hold a grudge till he dies. And then he'll pass those grudges to his kids who'll hold them till they die as well. So it's an interesting time, right. You know, and this is why this stuff matters to the average Aussie. Learning about this kind of geopolitics and what's happening in the world can equal money. Like it's a straight line towards wealth when you start to understand this stuff, which is why I love doing these podcasts, talking to smart people like Bish and getting that inside run of what's going on. So final thoughts, Bish, Bitcoin treasury companies, what do you like about them? If you do like anything, what are you afraid about them? Good, bad, what's the Bish take?
Oh, it's a good one. So Bitcoin treasury companies, it's quite divisive in the Bitcoin community. The Bitcoin community either absolutely adores Bitcoin treasury companies because they feel like it's, you know, the hyper Bitcoinization in a nutshell, essentially, which Safer Dean talks about a lot. And then others are saying, you know, it's Bitcoin IOUs all over again. Paper Bitcoin accusations are being levied. That's why the price hasn't ran as hard as it has. So it's quite a divisive topic. For me, I think Bitcoin treasury companies are a natural function of the birth of a hard, scarce macro asset, right? When equities or the stock market began back in the Dutch days, the Dutch East India Company, they used to sell shares in ships that would go out and get spices from the Far East and bring it back to Dutch ports. And if you had successful ships, that's your share value would increase. So that was the birth of the stock market back then. And so now we've watched the birth of digital asset markets and predominantly Bitcoin. Everybody is flocking to this new asset class and wanting to stake their claim on the future global settlement layer of the world. And I think that Bitcoin treasury companies are an integral part of that hyper-Bitcoinization piece. We were not going to get there with average mum and dad investors or, you know, the cypherpunk going out and saying, you know, being anti-government, anti-bank. Don't get me wrong, I'm all of those things. But at the same time, we need to see serious capital getting allocated into this space in order to, and not just by one or two players. Like Michael Saylor has done an incredible job writing the playbook, but it's super important to see a diverse number of these treasury companies compete with each other, because then you're going to get a genuine Bitcoin lending market. You can get competitive Bitcoin interest rates. And then that's when you can start having an actual financial ecosystem pop out of Bitcoin as well. The purist who's like, I'll buy and hodl and everything, Bitcoin dies if we just hodl Bitcoin indefinitely. Definitely hodl 90% of your stack, but Bitcoin should be used as your means of exchange, should be used in your everyday finances, should be used to help you get leverage and be used as collateral, right? You know, you obviously have your forever stack, which is a good chunk of it that sits in deep cold storage with multi-sig and all the protections around that. But then you need to have some liquid Bitcoin that you can then use in your everyday. And so I'm very, very bullish on Bitcoin treasury companies. In fact, I don't want to give away too much because I want to try to line up podcast number three. But with that said, there is a Bitcoin treasury company being built right here in Australia right now. I'm very close to it. and it's going to be the first Bitcoin treasury company in the country. You've heard it here. Adam Hudson's podcast. You guys get the absolute creme de la creme scoop. This is coming to Australia now. And look, it won't be able to be as big as Michael Saylor to begin with because our capital markets are quite small and we don't have the risk appetite that Americans have. But I know very close, firsthand, I know a very dear friend of mine building that Bitcoin treasury company right here. And I would like to share that more with you and once I've got more details that I can disclose.
When it's not embargoed, mate, I want first dibs on dropping the announcement. But I did hear a whisper that this was in the works, so it's very exciting, mate. And I can't wait to announce that one. I tend to agree with you because what I love about Bitcoin treasury companies is it's moving money, huge pools of money from assets that I think are trapped and underperforming. For example, bonds. It's moving all this capital from bonds into the pristine best capital. It's moving a lot of money out of real estate. Like I sold my entire real estate portfolio in Australia, and it's finding its way, a majority of it's finding its way into Bitcoin. And I'm not the only one, right? Like I've got a private group of, I got like four or five little private WhatsApp groups, and in there are high net worth Australians, some of them done hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate developments, and they're like, we're just sitting on the sidelines right now. We're moving capital because we just don't see the upside that we did see 10, 20 years ago when we were building our wealth. Now they're starting to invest in these things. And I love the fact that it's moving capital out of those dead markets into something that's honest and liberating. And it's giving, I mean, the one thing I wanted to add to the comment that Bish made about the rotation is that the other great thing is that, you know, this person who sold $9 billion worth of Bitcoin, it's establishing now a new base for the asset. So in the past, when you've got a price at $120,000 US and you've got a whole lot of people who bought it for 10 cents or a dollar or $2, like this particular person spent less than 100 grand to acquire that bag that was sold for $9 billion, right? So when these huge bags that in their mind that they paid this small amount, when these guys get rotated out and the new bag holder, which is a institution, their base is 120 and they're not going to sell it for 122. They're going to sell it when they get some Bitcoin style returns from it, right? So we've got now this new base forming in the Bitcoin asset class that is a lot higher than what it used to be when people came in. So I was gonna, you know, Bitcoin could go to a dollar, not when the last guy to buy was 120,000, right? When the last guy to buy was 10 cents, yeah, maybe, but not when the last, when the base, and there's a metric, I can't, average realized price or something, there's a metric there that you can get on Glassnode, but this is basically forming the base for the next journey. And when you think about it, a 10x from $100,000 to 10 mil, sorry, to $1 million a coin is nothing compared to going from a dollar to $120,000, right? This next 10x, I think, is inevitable. And you know, it's an exciting time. I think from a risk-adjusted basis, it still remains an extremely exciting time. As you know, Bish, I'm still buying. You know, you transact my trades, right?
100%. I bought another bag of Bitcoin myself. So every month, we know Stormrake, we myself and my business partners, we pay our staff, we pay our expenses, we always pay ourselves last. And then once everything has been accounted for, we buy more Bitcoin. I bought over six figures of Bitcoin with last month's proceeds of the business, which was a great month for us by all accounts. And the first thing I could think of was, please, Bitcoin, stay under 115. Stay under 115, please. I beg you, please. And then just bought up as much Bitcoin as we could at the start of August.
I did too. I bought another six-figure bag this month as well at close to all-time highs because I'm not buying for now. I'm buying for down trap. And I also agree with you about spending. For the first time in my life, I've started to spend a little bit of Bitcoin with service providers and so on. And I've started to accept only Bitcoin. So if somebody wants to have a chat with me, I charge $2,000 for a one-on-one, right? but I only get paid in Bitcoin. Otherwise, you can't do it. So
I was gonna like, and I mean, for me, I always hold a little bit of Bitcoin on my Moon wallet. People always ask me what hot wallet I use. I love using Moon. It's easy. You can do both Bitcoin mainnet and Bitcoin Lightning transactions within the same wallet. So send, receive, and I love this stuff, right? I always have like about 5 to 10 grand on me in Bitcoin at all times, because whether I'm spending Bitcoin at the local pub, which is the Fox Hotel, they accept Bitcoin here. So that's really cool, out on Alexander Parade in Collingwood, or whether it's, you know, the cattle farmer that I know out in Castle, Maine, they accept Bitcoin for beautiful grass-fed Victorian raised beef. I love that kind of stuff. So whilst I would never touch my stack that's in deep cold, I love using Bitcoin in my day-to-day life, because it's just like, it's direct peer-to-peer transaction, which is the first sentence of Satoshi's white paper, a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. And I feel like I'm really living that ethos when I'm using Bitcoin as my primary means of exchange.
Same. I only just started doing it when I went to Bitcoin Prague. And then I went, I don't know why I haven't been doing this before. It's quite liberating. And I think once business owners figure out that they can accept Bitcoin and they can either keep it and they go, oh, shit, this is actually an asset on my balance sheet, or I can convert some of it immediately back to fiat to pay my bills. Like once they understand that it's immediately, like people were blown away when I put my apartment on the Gold Coast. I said to my agent, tell the Gold Coast Bulletin that I will take 100% Bitcoin for my house. And I'm talking about a multi-million dollar property, right? And people go, this guy's nuts. They don't click in their head that I could just sell it tomorrow for cash if I wanted it. It's the same, right? It's the same. Yeah. There might be a tiny bit of movement on the day that I settle. Like that's, you know, the property sold, I could on that day sell it, and might be a tiny bit of movement one way or the other, but in my mind I'd just leave the whole lot in Bitcoin. But once people click that they can instantly convert that Bitcoin to cash if they want to, it changes it for Bitcoin. I've got friends now, you know them, right, who run Bitcoin only businesses. They pay all their suppliers in Bitcoin, and if you're not a supplier that will accept Bitcoin, they'll find another supplier, and they only invoice in Bitcoin. And it's just such a game-changing concept that it's 100% Bitcoin, right? Like it's crazy. Interesting world.
100%.
Bish, you are a legend, mate. Is there anything you wanted to leave the fans with, mate? Any parting words?
Well, the only thing I want to leave with is it's actually been unreal servicing the unemployable community. You guys are an absolute different breed. I'll have somebody call me on a Tuesday at 2 p.m. being like, Bish, I saw you on Adam Hudson's podcast. I've got $500,000 coming your way. Like, it's just insanity. Like, they're just, you know, you guys are absolute monsters. And I love servicing you guys. And the best part about our service is you only pay for what you use. So jump on stormrate.com, book yourself a consultation. They're free for 15 minutes. We can have a yarn. I can understand your current financial circumstances, the position you're in, and be able to provide you not financial advice, but guidance and potential recommendations to help you get onto a better path. And that's all thanks to being connected to Unemployable. So happy to take care of you guys if you just want to have a chat as well.
Please do, guys. There's a link in the description, but it's stormrate.com/unemployable. And when you go through that link, we are an affiliate, but it's the same price to you. But the main thing it does is it lets them know that you're part of our community. And people who listen to this pod, like we looked at the data last month, Bish, you had a big month. Our data is not so much the financial stuff as a podcast, it's how much attention. But in the last 30 days, people spent 110 years of watch time on our channel. So, and that's the big difference, is that when they come through to you, that they understand things differently. It's not some random coming who's got no idea. So that's why, guys, it's important to use the affiliate link, because it lets Bish know, hey, I'm one of the unemployable crew, and they will treat you they'll treat you well anyway. But it just helps them understand where you come from, and can sort of, there's a sort of a shorthand that develops when they've come off a pod like this, as opposed to somebody who hasn't watched something like this. They don't, you know, hasn't seen Bish, hasn't seen The Office. It just engenders a different level of trust and relationship. So it's always helpful. Bish, with that said, mate, awesome to see you again, man. Congrats on the new digs. Love it.
Thanks,
love,
man.
Love the suit. Love the whole thing. And look forward to seeing you really soon, man, somewhere around the world and breaking bread.
Absolutely. Hopefully Limassol, because it's a lot better and looks, I'm jealous of your Insta stories, man. You keep inspiring me. I've got to make my way over. So that'd be ideal.
You'll be welcome. Cheers, mate. Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.